Hello and welcome. This is part two of a special series we have in store for you with Tim Wigmore, who's written about the six different types of T20 sites. But this time we're pleased to welcome someone who's actually gone about building a T20 site. We have from Kolkata Knight Riders, AR Srikanth, who's been around with them for nearly about a decade. Srikanth, welcome on the show for the first time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me around.
Lovely. So I'll ask you a very simple question. We're talking about tactics, strategy in T20s, but you've been around since pretty much the start of the IPL around 2009. Can I ask you when approximately do you think teams in the IPL started thinking of building a side with a focused strategy? Because T20 back then used to be all entertainment and, you know, hitting sixes and giving stuff for the fans to enjoy who come to the ground. But as a serious strategic sport, when do you think teams started doing it in the IPL, or has it always been like this and we fans haven't seen it?
From a KKR's point of view, I feel it was 2011 IPL, which, you know, plays a lot of emphasis on strategy and building a team according to, strategic moves and players and skill sets and all those kind of things. Because before that, I think a lot of it was influenced by the results that we achieved in the first three seasons. And, we had to start from scratch and we need to build the entire team. So a lot of emphasis was given to strategic planning and the auction building up to the IPL.
Nice. 2011 is quite a long time ago. That's eight seasons ago. Tim, I'll come to you on one aspect that you've stressed upon throughout your series, which is the fact that spinners still don't bowl enough in T20 cricket, which is surprising to me as somebody who follows a lot of T20 cricket in India. I was looking at one of the stats from IPL 2008 to 2018, which is around the middle of last year's tournament. Spinners had already outbowled how much they bowled back in 2008, which is not much. But why do you still feel that spinners don't still play a crucial role in T20s, and why should they play a crucial role?
Spinners certainly play a crucial role in T20s, but they don't play as crucial role as they should do. And the basis of that is there's three phases of the game, which is the power play, the middle overs, and the death overs. And in all three phases of the game, spinners are cheaper than seam bowlers. And they're actually cheapest of all relative to seam bowls at the end of the innings. I think they go for one run and over less in the last five overs. The question we have here is, you know, whether that's because only the very best spinners bowl at the end. But even if you take out Rashid and Sunil Narine, spinners only are sort of, they're on 8.75 and over the last few years, in the last five, compared to just over 9.5 for seam bowlers. And I think actually the reason why we don't see more spinners is because with at the death, it's the default to bowl seamers. So if your seamer gets hit for 15, you think that's unlucky. But if the spinner's hit for 15, you probably would blame the captain and say, what the hell was he doing? But that's kind of doesn't really make sense when we blame the captains more if the spinners hit for the same amount of runs as the seamer was. So I think sort of it's the path of least resistance often to bowl seamers at certain points. But I don't know why we haven't got to a stage where, you know, it's common for teams to have maybe four, especially, you know, at home, and if you compare the pitches, maybe four specialist spinners and would only hope to bowl four overs of seam. I think that would be an interesting next step, potentially.
No, it's an inherent stereotype that we have in cricket, isn't it, Tim? That when you bowl a slower bowler, there's always greater chance of him getting tonked for sixes all around the park. That's a stereotype that we have. But Srikanth, you are part of a side that's actually built its bowling attack around spinners. If I remember right, at one point there was Kuldeep Yadav, Piyush Chawla, Sunil Narine, and you had another couple of part-timers to turn to. What's the thought process behind going against the grain there? Because traditionally, you can always say that the Eden Gardens wicket used to favour spinners and so on, but bowling 12, 13 overs of spin in a T20 game was still new at that time, wasn't it?
Well, if you look at it initially when we packed our side with spinners, it had a lot to do with the wicket. Eden Gardens, like you rightly said, did assist spinners more than any other venue in the IPL initially. And then when they relayed the wicket, we still had quality spinners in the side. And we didn't see any reason why we shouldn't bowl them against opposition, because quality is still quality at the end of the day. And when you have players like Sunil, Piyush and Kuldeep, who are part of your playing 11, you get a solid 12 overs from them on any given day. And, they are so skillful that they can bowl to domestic players as well as the overseas players. And it's an added advantage that we have such quality spinners in the team.
Tim, we're talking spinners in T20s, and it's unfair to miss out on someone like Rashid Khan. We had a discussion long ago about how Rashid Khan is quite a product of the evolution of bowlers in T20 cricket, which is that he's a slow bowler whose faster one is as threatening as his slower variations. Let me put it this way. Aren't we starting to see a wider variety or more diverse set of spinners? There are guys who are starting to bowl with both hands. They're ambidextrous. They're spinners cropping up from all around the globe. Rashid Khan and the next generation of spinners, do you think the slow bowlers are adapting more and more to a format that is all about scoring more runs and six hitting and clearing the boundary?
Yeah, no, I think spinners, what they have, leg spinners especially, so they can turn the ball into or out of the batsman, and therefore it gives them more options. It makes it a little bit harder for batsmen to set themselves up for shots. And I think spinners become very good at kind of bowling to a field and actually, you know, talked to Carl Crowe recently, who's one of the leading spin bowling coaches in the world, works a lot with Sunil Narine, and he said one of the most important skills as a spinner is to get a batsman to cut the ball when you want him to. And by that he means, you know, Narine is very good at bowling in a way that is very hard to play anything apart from the cut, and so you play the cut to the sweeper on the kind of point boundary, and that just goes for a single. And I think spinners have been a little bit ahead of fast bowlers in terms of getting the batsman to hit in a certain place, and therefore they can set a field for that. And that's one reason why we're having this gradual trend of spinners every year. They're bowling a little bit more, and that they're still more effective than seam bowlers. You know, we would expect, you know, logically, you expect a kind of equilibrium to be reached where spinners go, they keep on bowling more overs until they are going for the same amount of runs as seamers in certain phases of the game, which would suggest that they're bowling as much as they should. We still haven't seen that in any phase of the game, which is why, you know, a lot of people think spinners are still under bowled, even though they've been bowled more than before. And obviously for teams like Kolkata and Chennai, they've been crucial, and also the Garner Amazon Warriors in the CPL. You know, last season they often had four different spinners. So that was sort of, yeah, and they were prepared pitches that designed for turn. You know, perhaps it's not, you know, not high scoring T20 as some would like it, but that is this kind of ruthless use of home advantage, and it was very, very effective for them. So I think spinners you can get spinners for cheaper on the market than you can maybe for equivalent fast bowlers. And Samuel Badger was a great example of this. So he would bowl first, you know, three overs in the power play and a fourth over by the end of the 10th over, which is sort of traditionally where you're, you know, potentially your opening fast bowler would bowl. And he would, yeah, he would cost, and he was ranked number one bowler in the world in T20s, but he would cost so much less than if he had a fast bowler doing the same job for the same figures, which is kind of illogical.
Srikanth, you've been part of at least three big auctions now, or maybe more, but do you get a feeling about what Tim is alluding to here, which is that spinners come on the cheap? Is that thought process changing? Because in a market where you're competing for players and there are so few elite spinners or guys with specialist skills like a Rashid Khan, which we talked about, you guys have bought Sunil Narine before he became a big name globally. Is there a trend now that we're seeing that teams are starting to realize the value of spinners and bowlers as a whole?
I would completely agree with Tim in terms of a lot of spinners would come cheaper on the market. And, you know, if you look at spinners who are of marquee names, only those guys, like say two or three or maybe at the max four spinners who are marquee names would be at a premium price in an auction or a draft. But otherwise, most of the other spinners do come in pretty relatively cheaper compared to the fast bowlers. And to the other question that, are teams looking at spinners as a useful commodity? 100%. You can look at the value which Kings 11 Punjab paid for Varun Chakravarti,
yeah,
knowing that he was a special spinner. And we did that in the past as well. We picked up a local spinner for 2.4 crores in the past. Hmm. And we've spent quite a bit on Piyush, Kuldeep and Sunil Narine this season. The last season. And, you know, you could see that. You could see that a lot of teams are valuing spinners and they think that, you know, spinners are useful players in the squad and crucial players in the squad. So they don't mind going to that extra yard to get them in your squad. At the same time, fast bowlers do tend to get a lot more money than the spinners, unfortunately.
Still remain the glamour boys in T20, the fast bowlers. They've still got the bragging rights from around the globe. Tim, is this a pattern that you're seeing in tournaments around the globe? Because the IPL is unique in that it's got an auction and your values are explicitly mentioned. You know how much each player went for. But is this trend catching up in drafts and other leagues around the world?
Well, so yeah, we talked about the CPL. So with Ghana there, you know, I think they basically thought for their home wickets, they could use their draft picks basically more effectively to pick up spinners than fast bowlers, because there might be, because other teams didn't seem to value spin quite as much as they should have done, which meant they were higher quality spinners. You know, in each pick in a draft, the odds are the best spinner available would be a little bit better than the best fast bowler available at that stage of the draft. And that obviously, because they had a wicket that turns a lot, that was ideally suited to them. So I would still say, yeah, you obviously guys like Narine and Rashid Khan go for huge amounts. But if you look a little bit below that, you can still get some incredible bargains. And if you look at basically the T20 rankings, so the T20 player rankings.
The top five guys are wrist spinners at one point recently.
Yeah. And I think the top 10... let me see. So the top 10 players today in bowling, we have, there's only one fast bowler who's Chris Jordan at number 10. So the top nine are all spin bowlers. And I think, you can basically get, some very good spinners who maybe aren't quite, the top eight are all spinners. And then there's two seamers, Fahim Ashraf and Chris Jordan.
Yeah, I'm going to circle back slightly to the IPL. Srikanth mentioned Varun Chakravarty this year going for the big bucks. Srikanth, we saw this with Kings 11. Kings 11 have bought Varun Chakravarty this time. Last time when Ravi Ashwin captained them for the first time, he backed a person, a bowler like Mujibur Rahman, who's virtually unknown to the IPL, and he backed his other spinners to deliver the goods. He gave them the tough overs. Mujib, I think, bowled 20th over at one point. The question I'm getting to here is, how important is the captain and how much he understands the role of spinners and how much he gets the bowler here? Because I believe Gautam Gambhir was one of the best captains when it came to utilizing bowlers and going horses for courses, depending on what the situation and the conditions were.
Absolutely. You know, if you look at how Gautam operated when he was a captain of KKR, you know, he used his spinners really well. He used them as an attacking option to any batsman who came into bat newly at this crease, or even if he wanted to get a wicket when a partnership was building, he turned back to his spinners. And, you know, the same trend continues with Ashwin and even with DK now. Yeah. So, you know, captains do play a bigger role in giving that importance to spinners and valuing them as serious wicket-taking options in a T20 game. And it also reflects in some of the overseas captains who are not used to, you know, captaining good quality spinners, like, David Warner. You know, Sunrisers sometimes plays with only one spinner.
Yeah.
So, but they're still a very successful team when it comes to their bowling attack. They're one of the leading bowling attack in IPL. So it depends on captains as to how he feels towards a spinner. And I feel the captains do play a bigger role in getting the best out of the spinners available in their squad.
Tim,
I would just say that an ideal attack certainly would be an off spinner, a leg spinner, and a left arm spinner. But there is no reason you can't have two leg spinners in the same team who are doing together. I think Sunrisers running 13 had Amit Mishra and Karan and Khan Sharma in the same 11 and did very well and reached the playoffs.
Even now, I think they have a Shakib and a Rashid Khan, Yusuf Pathan to do the part time overs. It's quite a varied attack that they have.
They also have Shabazz Nadeem in there.
Jamaica,
they won the CPL and they had three left-arm spinners and they picked all three in none of their 13 games together. So actually, if you have bowlers with subtle differences, you could have a number of spinners who, in theory, bowl the same type of spin, the same attack. And there seems to be a taboo with picking two leg spinners. There's obviously not a taboo with picking two right-arm bowlers of 82 miles an hour who bowl over the wicket. So that's kind of a bit illogical, that difference in how they're viewed and the importance of variety.
Yeah, the other interesting thing is when T20 first came about, spinners were seen as, you know, the whipping boys, sort of, you know, that's again to do with the stereotype which we discussed earlier, Tim. I was going through the six types of teams you've mentioned. Among the bowling lot, there's a bowling team and a spinning team. The bowling team itself is filled with a lot of spinners. I wonder why there isn't a pace bowling heavy team, because does that not exist today? Because the slow bowlers are doing the job and they seem to be the winning formula around the globe. What's happened to building a team around fast bowlers, especially in conditions where we're talking something like the Perth Scorchers, even they are not really a fully pace bowling dependent side, are they?
Yeah, I suppose the best example of a pace bowling dominant team who'd be successful would be the Perth Scorchers. You know, they were three big bashes in 4 years from 13 to 17. They've declined a bit since, and pace bowling, they had a real battery of fantastic pace bowlers, and they were very successful with that. But their pitch was unusually kind of, it benefited pace to an unusual amount. Australia tends to be quite a pace friendly place. But yeah, I think in a kind of, on the open market, I think it's easier to get a certain quality of bowling attack with a lot of spin options than it is predominantly based around pace, simply because I think spinners who are equally good as fast bowlers, as, you know, Srikanth said, they tend to be a little bit cheaper. So that's probably why we have seen fewer bowling teams who have a very strong pace attack and whose success is built around that.
And even when we're talking pace attacks, we're talking about their variations. We're talking, for example, about an Andrew Tai and the various cutters that he has in his armory. We're talking about guys with, you know, standout skills, which are not really a traditional fast bowler's strength. Srikanth, one thing which we think about when we think of pace bowling in the IPL in recent times is when KKR got RCB out for 49. The bowling attack which took all the wickets was Nathan Coulter-Nile, Umesh Yadav, Chris Wokes and Colin de Grandhomme. That's probably the equivalent of a close to complete pace bowling attack. Why don't we see more of these things in India? Why don't we see more of these games happening in India? Is it because the pitches and conditions don't suit pace bowlers? Because during the IPL, most of the time, we read about a Bumrah bowling an excellent death over or a match turning spell quite often, but we don't hear of pace bowlers often enough in that same vein.
Well, I tend to disagree a little bit with that, because if you look at that game when we got RCB out for a low score, I think the conditions and the wicket on that particular day did suit the fast bowlers more than the spinners. Mm. And, you know, our bowlers probably hit the right areas and we were able to get them out for a low score and defend our low score as well. You know, coming back to why paces are not, running through sides or stuff like that, but I feel there are quite a few games last year in the IPL. If you remember, there was one game when Ankit Rajput got a fifer.
Yeah.
And he bowled brilliantly. And there was a game when Avesh Khan, you know, bowled really well and he got a 3 or 4 wicket haul in a couple of overs. Mm. And there was Deepak Chahar who did quite well for CSK against Mumbai when he got those early wickets. And there are quite a few games where seamers are getting those crucial breakthroughs, but, you know, the quality of the opponents would have been greater where they consolidate and they put up a big score. So sometimes you don't really realize that the pacers have done a good job, but then the backup pacer or the third pacer or even the spinners were not effective in that particular game. Mm. So it sometimes just slips out. And we don't quite realize that the pacers have actually got those breakthroughs, but they've not maintained or sustained that momentum for their side.
Yeah, the last point I wanted to bring up is about death bowling, which Srikanth has made for your series of pieces, Tim, which is that teams will eventually have two sets of death bowlers to do the job, because he sees a power play to be a similar sort of face to the death bowlers, where the boundaries are in demand because they are easy to come by as well at that point, and in the death overs the boundaries are in demand, so he kind of sees those as similar faces. Do you see something like that happening, and how do you see that panning out?
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea that you'd have sort of sets of bowlers on the power play and then at the death, and almost two sets of death bowlers. I don't know if teams have really done that massively. I mean, one who springs to mind is Umar Gul, back in actually the second T20 World Cup in 2009, he would often come in the sort of the 13th over and bowl 4 overs straight through because he was so good at nailing his Yorkers at the end of the innings. I think it's more common now to see even very good death bowlers only really bowling 2 overs at the death in a particular spell. But I think that's one to look out for, and you know. But I think there's always a danger that, you know, however good your death bowler is, if they get lined up in, you know, say they've got three of us bowled to death, if their first one of those gets hit for 15 by a batsman, then you're kind of a little bit stuck. Like, do you stick or twist with them? And I think, yeah, that's, you know, if you're restricted to two overs at the death, it gives you a little bit more flexibility. Because the worst case, if you bring on a special death bowler, he gets hit, then you feel you can't trust him again, and then suddenly you need to bowl your sixth bowler in, you know, the 18th over of the innings or something. But that said, you know, death bowlers are becoming, they're becoming so, so skilled. That's one to watch.
Srikanth, I'm going to come to you to find out what you look for in an auction, because we're looking at standout skills. We're talking about, for example, a once-in-a-generation guy like Malinga or Sunil Narine, who's got specific skills which are suited to the format. In an auction where, you know, everybody's competing for the same set of skill sets, what are the main things you look for while picking a set of pace bowlers? Because we're talking about certain skills which are far more valuable in the shortest format.
Specific skills of a fast bowler going into the auction. We'll probably look at, you know, what are the different variations he's got as a pacer, and what are his main skill sets. I mean, is he a heavy ball bowler? Is he primarily a death bowler? Can he bowl with a new ball? Does he swing the ball or does he seam the ball? Has he got variations with the new ball? And how does he perform under pressure? And things like, how does he bowl to a left-hand batsman compared to a right-hand batsman? And, you know, how strong he is physically, and does he have the fitness qualities to sustain the entire tournament? These are some of the parameters which we base the fast bowlers on. And, most of the time, this is the basis on which we look at fast bowlers, and then we see who tick into our scheme of things, and who comes within our budget, and that's how we go about it.
Yeah, I'm going to finish with something that we discussed in the previous episode, Srikanth, which we it's a headline from Azhar Mahmood, which he had given an interview a couple of years ago about bowlers winning your tournaments while batsmen win your games. Is that a thought process that is echoed inside a franchise or think tank?
Absolutely. I think batsmen win games and bowlers win tournaments, and you know, that has been quite evident with some of the teams that has won championships in the past, and be it Perth Scorchers or Sunrisers Hyderabad, when they won the tournament, I think bowlers absolutely win your tournaments. And having a strong bowling unit, you always feel, you know, you're confident of defending or any target that they've set. And, you know, having a very strong bowling unit is definitely an added advantage.
And, of course, the Chennai Super Kings team of 2010-11, where they had Muralitharan and Ashwin and Shadab Jakhate used to bowl this full quota of 4 overs to go with a pace attack featuring Doug Bollinger and other Indian bowlers who pitched in at various points of time. It's quite an interesting quote from Azhar Mahmood, which has made its way into T20 folklore. Now it's being discussed widely. Tim, same question as last time. Where do you see the next big bowling innovation or breakthrough coming from? Are we going to see more and more spinners whose faster variations do the job, and more pacers with slow variations, or is it going to head in a different direction? What's the sense that you get from speaking to so many coaches and players and insiders for your series of pieces?
So I think franchises, they will begin to bowl, or continue to bowl, I should say, more spin bowling. I think that will become a trend a little bit more. I think we might see more spinners bowling at the end of the innings. I talked about, you know, how spinners are actually they're cheaper than fast bowlers at the end of the innings, even though they don't bowl very often now. I think so. We might bowl some more spinners at the end of the innings. I think with fast bowlers, they actually have evolved quite a lot, and it's just it's incredibly hard to bowl in T20. But I think we might see a little bit more of, I suppose, fast bowlers as spinners have done. You know, being able to get bats to hit in a certain position. They were trying to do that, but even more. And I suppose, yeah, we always talk about Yorkers, but, you know, the thing about Yorkers and why we don't see them more is because the margin of error is so, so small. Yeah. So, you know, a Yorker, you know, goes for 6 runs over, which is brilliant, but you just miss it.
A couple of inches and the Yorker becomes a full toss, that sort of thing.
Sorry?
I was saying, if the batsman moves a couple of inches to his right or left, and the Yorker becomes a full toss or something else.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you bowl just misses it by a few inches, you know, all the data we have suggests that even the best bowlers, they nail Yorkers less than half the time. So, it, you know, even a guy like Lasith Malinga, who was incredibly good at that. So that's, it's just so, so hard. I think that, that sort of encapsulate, you know, how difficult it is to build in T20. Margins of error are so, so small. So I think bowlers will probably improve, and the way teams bowls will improve, and the way teams use bowls will also improve, but yet scores will still rise a little bit more.
Srikanth, this is off air. I'm sorry I didn't intimate you in advance, but we were thinking of doing a fun exercise earlier, but I think it's more suitable for bowling attacks. Can I ask you to pick your dream IPL bowling attack? It can be all KKR, of course, but if you want to pick somebody else, so if let's say you're picking a dream bowling attack from the IPL's gone by, like build about a 5-bowler bowling attack, do you want to take some moments, think about it, and then we can record? Do you mind that?
I can go ahead.
Okay, cool. I'll just give you the intro and then you can start. Yeah?
I'll pick 5 bowlers, okay? Three pacers and 2 spinners.
Perfect. Just before we conclude, we thought we'd do a fun exercise with somebody who's been involved with the IPL for so long. It's about 10, 11 years to be precise. Srikanth, can I ask you to pick your all-time IPL bowling 11, the best 5 bowlers who can do the job on any track, any conditions where the IPL's been played in over the years? You can choose your combination of pacers, spinners, just to tweak the rules a bit, we can let you pick without the overseas rule restriction.
Okay, I would go with Bhuneshwar Kumar and Jasprit Bumrah as my two frontline fast bowlers. And I would go with Rashid Khan and Sunil Narine as my 2 spinners. And my third pacer would be a toss-up between, say, Malinga slash... That's a difficult one to pick another third seamer. So I'll stick with Malinga.
Wow, so that's actually 3 out of 5 overseas, which is actually something that happens in real life as well. Since you are someone who's been part of the KKR think tank, may I ask if Narayan will open the batting in this team? Because you've got quite a few guys who can bat here. Rashid can hit a mean ball, Bhuvneshwar can bat. Narayan to open?
Well, we'll have to wait and see. But we've got quite a few guys who can open the bowling. So I can't tell you who's going to open the bowling the first game, the same way it goes to the batting as well.
Excellent. So, in a fictional scenario, Bhuvneshwar Kumar, Jasprit Bumrah, Rashid Khan, Sunil Narine, and Lasith Malinga. An attack that would beat pretty much most teams on most days, which is all you can hope for from a T20 bowling lineup. It's been a pleasure, Tim, for joining us over the past 2 episodes. Thanks very much for your time.
Cheers. Yeah, thank you for having me. And everyone should read the series on the Cricket Monthly, of course, as well.
Yeah, we'll give it another plug as well. Right, and thanks very much, Srikanth, for your time, for taking time off just before the IPL begins. I'm sure it's a busy season at the Knight Riders, and wish you all the very best for the season.
Thanks for having me, and it was a pleasure being on the show.
Thanks very much, and thanks to you, listener, for listening to both parts of the show. If you haven't checked out the previous episode, you should head to the Talking T20 timeline, wherever you get your podcasts, and get hold of that first episode. That's about the batting side of things and how teams in the IPL have evolved, and why... Virat Kohli hasn't yet won an IPL. That's an interesting one from Tim and Gaurav, who were part of the first episode. As always, thanks for your time and thanks for listening to Talking T20. Look forward to having you sometime soon. Cheers.